Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Mohamed Salah is this number 50 for Liverpool. No, saved by Pickford. Henderson blocked. Robertson towards Van Dijk. He wins the header. Chance here for Fabinho. What a challenge. Aubameyang to win the North London derby. Salah! It will be Aubameyang over the bar. Oh, goodness me. What drama at the end of the 185th North London derby. It's a corner.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
You're welcome to the Arlo White Show. This is Arlo White commentating on everything until the end of days.
The voice of the Premier League here in the United States. It was a defensive weekend, as you heard there from those clips. Finishing not necessarily the name of the game in either of the two most high-profile matches of the weekend, which we will get into in just a few moments. Of course, it was MLS opening weekend, so we'll kind of look back at our sort of the things that stood out to us from the start of the season, which I thought was pretty fun. Some memorable scenes weather-wise around the country.
Yeah, burnt grass at your native Philadelphia. That looked decidedly preseason.
Let's see. Red cards, man of the match. Of course, El Clasico took place
this weekend.
I will never say those words. That would be wrong grammatically. Another snow event here. I feel like a real man. I was out early shoveling, grunting with each shovel of heavy snow. And I'm ready. I feel like Paul Bunyan sitting here ready to go.
The lows are going to be low this week.
The temperature, you mean?
Yeah.
I know. Very cold.
I kind of like that, though.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going back running. I have an announcement to make next week on the podcast, by the way.
Oh.
About a little something I'm going to do.
Oh.
May even have a guest on to discuss it.
Even I feel in the dark on this.
Something that's not for myself, but to give back. How about that?
You're a very giving person.
But I start training for that this week. And I like the cold.
Okay.
Like the cold sweat on my back, Andrew.
Yeah, I don't know. Once we get to March, I'm kind of ready for things to turn. But that's just not the way it is anymore.
No.
Things are changing. Let's see, JJ. Let's talk about the Premier League this weekend. It was we are here, of course, again on a Monday morning because we are now starting to reach that point of the season where it just feels like things, weekends like this, you know.
You can't let them go.
Liverpool, Everton, North London Derby, Manchester City getting back in top of the table. It's just like, how do we, What are we supposed to really do?
You can't start talking about them on Thursday.
No. And we will, of course, be back later this week for a Champions League podcast. But no. Today it's about the Premier League. And I guess the opening question is whether or not this was a landmark weekend in the title race, where Liverpool now and Manchester City now are on the same number of games played, and Manchester City have moved above Liverpool in the challenge.
Yeah, it feels like advantage City now. Liverpool, who held the whip hand for so long in this Premier League race and had the chance to extend it that night in Manchester and make it 10 points. Since then, we've seen a big swing toward Manchester City.
Yeah, 7 points up after that heading into that game. Yeah. To now 1 point back.
Yeah.
In about 2 months.
No, it's not over. By no means is it over, but the omens would suggest that you're looking now for more drop points from Manchester City. And while they haven't torn up trees against West Ham, against Bournemouth even at the weekend, they are grinding out results. And it's going to take a little bit of help from our friends if Liverpool are going to win this title. But it's not over. Still very much a title race.
Yeah.
But this weekend was deflating. As we mentioned last week on the podcast when Jamie Carragher said on Sky after the 0-0 draw at Old Trafford, this is not the defining result. It's where Liverpool end up at the end of the week. And if they end up at the end of the week on top of the league, then you can say they're in a really good position. That has not happened.
Now, but it is very narrow.
It is but a point.
Yeah.
And that's why I say there's a title race still on. But you would be a fool. Well, you wouldn't be a fool. You would be denying what you saw at the weekend if you think that it's now Liverpool's to lose anymore, or if you think that they're in the position of strength that they were even on Wednesday night after they had beaten Watford. That's not the case.
Now, the one thing, though, that is at least of some reassurance to Liverpool is that it appears God does not want Manchester City to win. And by that, I mean players are dropping like flies right now on that roster. De Bruyne with a hamstring injury after having already dealt with muscular injuries this season. So how long will he be out? Laporte is already out. Fernandinho is already out. John Stones had to leave the match over the weekend.
Yes, but this is why they spent 2 years squad building prior to Pep taking the job, to absorb these things. Like, they can absorb them. We've seen them do it before.
Yeah, well,
now, these
yes.
are significant injuries, and that's why if you want to use this as a piece to say Liverpool are still in it, that's fine. But if you look at the teams that they've got coming up, what you the variable for me is that they are now fighting on multiple fronts.
Liverpool and Manchester City.
Manchester City are.
Because they're trying to go for the quad.
Right. Now, Liverpool are still in the Champions League, but I think that is more absorbable than perhaps what Man City have to. But I look at both squads. I still think Man City's squad is significantly stronger.
Well, the thought to me that, like, Liverpool, and I get it. I totally get it. But the thought to me that the Champions League is, it may as well be like the Carabao Cup right now Liverpool. It's just, like, it's hard to wrap my mind
around. If you want to say to me, what are you talking about, JJ? The Champions League is the biggest club competition in Europe, bar any domestic league. I will happily concede that. But this is not about that. This is a different context. You have to put it in the context of going 30 years without a top-flight championship for Liverpool.
I almost feel like Liverpool could go on and win the Champions League, but if they fall, like, dramatically, just desperately short of Manchester City in the season, I feel like this season will not be remembered fondly.
Steady now. You know the way fans are. They'll find a way to, like, obviously that would be an unbelievable thing. It would be their sixth European Cup, and it would dwarf probably or at least paint a better light on failing in the league. But for me, what did I tell you before the first leg against Bayern Munich at Anfield, how it felt like a sideshow? This is a sideshow. The big game is Manchester United at the weekend.
Yeah, the interesting ones, you can't help. This is such a dumb, foolish exercise to do because we see things just get turned upside down all the time. But I do have their remaining fixtures in front of me.
Yeah.
Manchester City and Liverpool, I believe, both will host Spurs. City
and Liverpool
to Old Trafford.
Liverpool will host Chelsea. And the rest of Liverpool's running, not to cut across you, Andrew, is pretty much lower half teams are teams outside of the top, whatever.
But you can't.
But I don't buy it.
I can't help but look ahead to that final weekend where Manchester City will be at Brighton.
Right.
You have to kind of just think that that's 3 points. And Liverpool host Wolves, who are so predictable in their confusion this season, if that makes sense. Like, week to week, you know, they're beating top six sides, they're drawing top six sides, but they struggle against lower table teams.
Yeah, right.
How nervous will you be if it comes down to that final game? It's like USA Trinidad.
Yeah, but with the way Liverpool are playing against, you know, let's be honest, Everton are not top class Premier League opposition. To bring it back to this weekend's game, and if you look at the way the Liverpool attack is stuttering, you wonder if there could be drop points even in there for Liverpool.
Well, let's use that as a jumping off point because I never would have thought with the way last season went for Liverpool, from an attack standpoint, that this season would turn out to be defined by their defending for them. Now, maybe that's a little bit cruel to what they still have been able to achieve in attack. But I feel like right now, if you're asking me who's the best player on the team, it's Van Dijk. It's not Salah.
Well, yeah.
The change that they made at keeper, you feel obviously, you know, he has mistakes in him too.
Right.
But you feel a lot safer with Alisson back there than whatever you had back there last season. It just feels like this team has changed in a way that I don't think anyone really expected season to season.
Yeah. They're operating without an out-and-out centre forward in many ways. I mean, Sadio Mane has taken on that mantle and is having a fine season in terms of scoring goals. Mohamed Salah is reverting maybe a little bit to the mean, even though he has had a good goal-scoring season. The weekend kind of showed up for me what we thought about when we bought him from Roma, you know, 15 goals, 6 assists for Roma that season, I think it was, or maybe he had more assists than that, but whatever. He always felt like, what, a winger. And the guy is very, very... how should we put it? Even when he plays, obviously, in an attacking forward position, and it's not as wide as a traditional winger, in interviews, he's very kind of forthright in saying, I am a winger, I don't see myself as a forward. And certainly, at the weekend, when you see him shift the ball onto his left foot for the first save by Pickford, and then do it again and allow Lucas Digne to... You're just like, what are you doing? Like, you feel as if last season he might have pulled the trigger with the right, or you feel like a top-class striker, like an out-and-out goal scorer is going to smash those with his right.
One thing was
so frustrating.
We've talked about this a little bit in previous weeks, but one thing that I'm just surprised by, and I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know what Jurgen Klopp sees at training. I'm not saying Divock Origi is not a good player. He's
right.
fine.
I know what you're going
like,
to say.
But this team needs a little something different right now in attack. And to me, like, every time Jurriden Shaqiri comes on for them, he brings something of value. And it just feels like he's so that guy who's just sitting there right now, like, begging to be called upon, and he's just not getting used with the sort of regularity that maybe Liverpool could really use from him.
What I don't understand is when Alden didn't have a great game at the weekend, and his driving runs from midfield are important, so why would you not introduce Naby Keita, who does that kind of thing? Why did you buy him? Like, why did you buy him? And to your point about Shaqiri, if Firmino doesn't play, because we regularly say how he links the whole thing together, he kind of plays as a number 9, number 10 kind of player. He does almost fulfills two roles, and he links the play together. Divock Origi's not that player, so why wouldn't you play Shaqiri?
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
So, and why would you not bring him on at all? Crazy. And I tweeted out, and it seemed to hit home with a few people, you know, guys who we thought 6 months ago we were moving on from. And I'm not saying they're bad players, I'm just saying it was time to move on from them. Like, Lallana and Origi are still featuring heavily in this side. And you wonder, is that a conservative note from Klopp that ultimately will cost us? Now, on the bare bones of the game, Andrew, Fabinho puts that in the net. You don't see Everton equalising, and you feel like it could be 1-0. I mean, Everton did create chances, but not
to the sort of extent that Liverpool did with the Salah chance and really the Fabinho one. I don't know. Is it asking a lot of a player like him to take that first time?
At that proximity, I don't think so.
And at the very, I mean, has the touch let him down?
At the very least, have a good first touch.
Yeah.
That was wild.
Yeah. It gave Digne just enough of an opportunity to get back in and clear that away. I mean, it really was that close. Because you're right, I think if Liverpool scored there, I think they probably go on and win that game. So, with the way they're defending is now, since February started, talking about their defending for a sec, they've given up one goal. On February 4th, they drew 1-1 with West Ham.
Right.
They have not given up a goal since. That includes Bayern Munich that they played. And Manchester United, who are like the form team.
Yeah, now, it should be said they only had like three games in a 30-day span. But nevertheless, that defending is...
You're not giving them enough credit.
They don't look troubled, is what I would say.
It was 1-1 against West Ham to start February. Then 3-0 over Bournemouth, 0-0 with Bayern, 0-0 with United, 5-0 over Watford, and 0-0 with Everton.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's, you know, those are teams that score. Bournemouth, Bayern, Watford, Everton at home. Like, that's United. That's really impressive to me.
We should note that Watford at home in midweek has been forgotten now. That was a 5-0 win for Liverpool.
I know.
You know, and it just didn't happen, and that can happen in derby games, but they've got to take one of those chances and take 3 points from Goodison Park, and they didn't. It should be mentioned how good the Digne tackle was. Michael Keane, his tackle on Salah.
Yeah.
Michael Keane had a very good game, and you know I've been super critical of him since he moved to Everton. And I thought Seamus Coleman, you ask any Everton fan and they've been like, he's not been the same since he came back from the broken leg. He had an excellent game too. So that should be noted. Mm-hmm. While up the field, we still don't know what they are.
No.
Imagine Everton can get that result, celebrate like they did, and Everton fans will still be at the back of their minds, are we getting better? We don't know.
Yeah, this game for them is not about showing improvement. It's just about, let's prevent Liverpool from achieving anything this season. That's what it's about.
It's all about the context of the ball, hopping on the crossbar, Klopp running on the field.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Speaking of Klopp, he was spitting fire afterwards. I've got a few quotes here from him.
All right, go ahead.
The first one here, JJ, I'm going to preface it with this from me.
Bad opinion alert. Bad opinion alert.
Jurgen Klopp has been getting killed for a quote about the wind.
Yeah.
I don't think people have actually read the quote. I think people are just seeing headlines, Klopp blames wind. Here's the actual quote that he says. It is okay, a difficult game for different reasons and a wild opponent. The wind was coming from all directions and did not help anybody. What's wrong with saying that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that, but we are in a weaponized world, right?
Yeah, like I say bad opinion alert because everybody is just making fun of Klopp. Let's mock him for now he's blaming the wind before it was the pitch. You know, like, I read that. I said, yeah, that's totally... He's not saying that Liverpool were disadvantaged. Everyone was. Everton had a hard time playing through it. Liverpool had a hard time playing through it. We blame snow. We blame rain. Wind can be just as debilitating. I have no problem with him saying
that. But this is like young fellas on Twitter, and it's all about owning people. And it's all about retweeting with laughing emojis comments that are made. Like, I remember growing up, when a manager had an opinion about the field or the weather, or the wind in particular, that was like, okay, fair. And he said it didn't help anybody. I'm sure it didn't. I'm sure the fact that the pitch was slick. How many times did we see the ball run out over the in line?
Yeah.
Like, that's an okay comment to make. The only thing I would have changed for Klopp was he came in with that comment pretty early in the course of the interview. If he buries it a little bit further and says, look, tough game, tough opponent, it's a derby, we drew 0-0, didn't take our chances, and then gets to the wind, fair enough. But don't lead off with that.
He's had other moments where things he says in press conferences drive me crazy.
Yeah, right.
It was after the West Ham game, right, where Liverpool were awarded a bogus penalty,
right,
which they converted, and then he's going on complaining about the officiating,
right,
afterwards.
Sure,
like,
sure.
There's times where he needs to check himself, but I don't know, I thought this was, I really thought that was okay.
Yeah. But look, people just want to jump on things, they want to get clicks and retweets and all that stuff. Like, honestly, was the wind the reason Liverpool didn't win that game? No, unless the wind blew the ball off Fabinho's knee. That didn't happen.
Then he went on to say this about where they're at right now on the table after this match. Quote, I'm completely fine with chasing. Who wants to be top of the table at the beginning of March?
I do.
It's nice, but there are lots of games to play.
Again.
Anything wrong with this?
Again, he is treading the line that he's tread all the way through, which is kind of being a cautious, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So when we were going to City, is this the biggest game of the season? And he does his laugh, his maniacal laugh.
Emotional.
Very emotional football. But no, this is normal. And his big one, everything is cool or everything is okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, that kind of thing. This is the line he's been treading. Now, do I buy it? No. And he came off a little bit irritated and panicky at the weekend, which is...
I do think, even though, let's say they had gone on and won the title, I know it wouldn't have been wire to wire, but they've been out in front for long enough now, basically, where it almost was starting to feel like that.
Yeah.
You know, that is asking a lot of your team. Like, now the pressure shifts back to Manchester City. How will they cope with it? You know, maybe a little bit of that, whatever pressure might have been on Liverpool, maybe some of that melts off now that they're no longer top. There's a heavy burden with being at that spot for as long as they were kind of demanding themselves to be.
And also,
they were going to go on and do
and
it.
Also, that being, I've said this consistently, even with that win over Man United at Anfield when Mourinho was in charge, I've never felt they've been playing that well.
Yeah.
In terms of away performances, Spurs away when they should have won 5-1 and only won 2-1.
Should have been 2-2.
Okay.
It should have. That was a penalty,
oh,
and you know it.
But the chances of XG. But like, or for example, Bournemouth away or PSG at home. Like, there's been very few out-and-out performances where you say, ooh, that was like last season. So, you know, maybe it was unsustainable, but here we are right now, and you're right, maybe the pressure goes to City and we see something different.
Yeah, one more from old Jurgi. He says, quote, I watched Match of the Day last night and saw the celebrations of Man City. They had 900 chances and scored one goal, a shot with the wrong foot. You have to be ready for these chances.
I don't. Is he having a go at Liverpool, or is he having a go at City there, or what is he doing? I don't know. I'm not sure where that's.
I thought he was having a go at City.
I mean, if you're talking about the wrong foot, we can look at Mohamed Salah and that left that he wants to get onto, and we could talk about Fabinho and his floppy knee. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he needs to just kind of worry about his team right now.
I would agree with that. Also, the ball boy with the little, you know,
the fake clap.
Well, you are at Goodison Park and some scouser decides to make fun of you. This is par for the course, Jurgen.
Yeah.
Just ignore it. Blow him a kiss or just wave at him and walk down the tunnel. Why are you getting up? What? That to me suggested he's a little tightly wound now, and he knows that momentum's been given up and he's frustrated.
Let's see. We move on, JJ, from the Everton Liverpool derby to the Tottenham-Arsenal one, the North London derby. They share a point in what was really a drama-filled afternoon
it was.
At Wembley. Not a pretty performance from Spurs. Again, boy, I've been saying that a lot lately, which is kind of troubling. But one thing that I liked that I saw afterwards was, okay, so the way Tottenham went on and won, or not won, it kind of almost felt like it at the end,
right,
which flies in the face of what I'm about to say, but the way that that game ended with the penalty save and then the rebound that's knocked over the bar, ends 1-1. You know, Tottenham of a few years ago would have really celebrated that. But Moussa Sissoko tweeted this after the match. Not the result expected today, but that's football. We're all disappointed. Thanks for your support. That is, I don't know, that's just not something that I am used to seeing from Tottenham after a dramatic draw where they really were the ones fortunate to
have drawn. I think that might be the most mundane quote I've ever... I mean, you're a Tottenham fan. Maybe you can take something from that. That I don't...
Not the result expected today, but that's football. We're all disappointed. I don't know. That kind of... I'm glad that that's how they feel.
If I was him, I would be relieved, honestly. Spurs did not play that well. They weren't awful, but like... Arsenal got things right tactically and could have caught them several times on the break. And
Arsenal were so wasteful.
Oh my God.
Lacazette had the chance early on. You saw him. Scuffed.
He was not disappointed that he was taken off when he sat on that chair.
He was mad at himself.
He was reliving that chance. And at 2-0, Andrew, I think that's
right before he got taken off, he had another chance that was almost equally as wasteful as the first one. So I think he knew if this ends with us losing or if this ends in a draw, I think part of him probably is thinking, this is kind of on me.
I wonder if Emery has similar regrets about taking Ramsey off quite when he did.
What a goal he scored. Mm. Now, I mean, it was born out of an awful mistake.
What
from
are
Davison
you doing?
Sanchez.
You've got to be aware of where you are in the field and the high line you're playing. Just boot that.
Right, there's no one behind me.
Just boot that.
Yeah. Or just, I'm even okay with him trying to head it, but just like, don't get it so wrong.
Well, don't do that, yeah.
Yeah, don't do that.
But now Ramsey had a lot of space to make up,
And I didn't even think Hugo Lloris played it wrong. I think Hugo, like, he made Ramsey wait as long as possible, and Ramsey, with Wanyama bearing down on him at the end, Wanyama was like a tick away from having recovered and gotten back, but it was a great finish from Ramsey.
Extreme composure from Ramsey. But that was that's the threat that they carried with him when he would get the ball in broken play when Spurs were on the attack and Spurs were kind of wasteful giving the ball away and trying to execute 1-2s that didn't come off, and then you'd see Arsenal break and they looked dangerous.
Yeah,
that game could have been over.
Yeah,
midway could've. Through the second half,
Tottenham really had two good chances, and they happened in the same moment when the double save from Leno on Eriksen, and the rebound from Sissoko he's got to finish, but he doesn't shoot like. Even seeing Moussa Sissoko with an attempt on goal, I was like, oh my God, my head exploded just at the sight of it. Really, though, the three huge moments in this game, of all of which came with a little bit of controversy. The penalty awarded to Harry Kane, which wound up equalizing for Spurs. Now, I watched it, as I'm sure you did, multiple times, and he is offside, and he is fouled by Mustafi. Both things do happen in this play. Now, I swear to you, I'm not searching out like the Tottenham angle on this.
Sounds like you are.
No. On the Sunday supplement, I don't remember who it was that they had on, but he said that what they're saying in the referees union or whatever they refer to them as is that the right call was made. It's close, but I guess the conclusion that was drawn was that it's all a matter of when you deem, like, a guy can only be offsides once he is engaged with the play. And the way that they are viewing it is that the foul occurred just before you would consider him to have been engaged.
The journalist sat round the table with the croissants and the orange juice on the Sunday supplement. That's the view they came up with.
No, it wasn't their view. It was one of the journalists who was on there who had spoken with, I forget who, from the referees.
Okay, so that's a Sky vehicle. Here's another Sky vehicle. Okay. Dermot Gallagher, former referee. And this is the last thing I'll say on it, because this has been debated and is quite tedious in terms of... Mm-hmm. But this is what he said. What I would say, first of all, is that it's a great spot from the referee for the penalty. It was definitely a foul. I think the problem occurs at the outset because the assistant isn't in the right start position and he's always playing catch up then. He doesn't see that Kane challenges for the ball, and because he doesn't see that, he doesn't flag offside. But the minute Kane challenges for the ball, he becomes active and involved in play, and therefore offside should have been given. So this is Law 11, the offside rule. If a player in an offside position is moving towards the ball with the intention of playing the ball and is fouled before playing or attempting to play the ball or challenging an opponent for the ball, the foul is penalised as it has occurred before the offside offence. In a nutshell, that means at the minute the free kick was taken, if I'd have grabbed hold of you at that point and you hadn't challenged for the ball, I could give a penalty. Because Kane challenged for the ball, the clue there is that he's in the air. That shows he's going for the ball, and if he goes for the ball, that negates the first bit.
I'm honestly confused.
Right. Dermot Gallagher is basically saying that Kane was fouled, ergo penalty. However, Kane, in challenging for the ball, becomes active and thus negates the offside in the first, or excuse me, he the offside then? Well, first of all, the linesman has to flag. He doesn't flag.
Right.
Kane is, it shouldn't have been a penalty, is Dermot Gallagher's conclusion.
Okay, well that's, I guess this will be one of those where you talk to five people and get...
The minute Kane challenges for the ball, he becomes active and involved in play, and therefore offside should
But there's clearly a subjectiveness to when he's challenging for the ball.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess you have to just leave it up to each individual to decide that on their own.
And that's where we have the problem, because people want the absolute...
Yeah. By the way, he then goes on and converts the penalty and now is the all-time leader in goals in the North London Derby. So props to Harry Kane for that. Then, JJ, moment of controversy number two, the penalty awarded to Aubameyang, which looked like it was going to give Arsenal all 3 points. I don't have much to say about this other than it's not a penalty.
No, not for me.
And I almost lost my mind when it was called. It was blind rage. And
it might have been what Klopp got fined for, the whole... I'm not sure about the penalty. I've just given one end. It's at the back of my mind, the back of my psyche. And Anthony Taylor gives another penalty.
What a moment to decide to break out that makeup call in the 90th minute of a tie game in the North London Derby. I mean, my God.
How about this? Neither of them were penalties. Letter of the law, neither were penalties. There we go.
Ball don't lie. Which then leads to the final one. The encroachment from Jan Vertonghen,
well,
which...
Look, once the penalty is given, that's actually an easy one for the referee to get right.
But he didn't.
He didn't.
No, Vertonghen is almost where Aubameyang is when the ball is struck.
And that makes a huge difference in the follow-up play.
Which Vertonghen made... I think you have to call it the play of the game. Deflecting Iwobi's pass away from Aubameyang and clearing it over the bar to save the draw for Spurs. Yeah, I mean... Yes, he was clearly encroaching. There's no question about it. Now, you know, there are varying degrees of egregiousness to that. Arsenal, there's a still shot that I saw of when Kane struck the ball, and there were two Arsenal players that had encroached on that.
See what you're doing to it to yourselves?
Don't make... No. Don't do it.
See what we're doing, though.
What are we doing?
I don't know. We're just... We're going into these things with, like, microscopic, and we're seeing several different angles and...
Mm-hmm. It's important. Accuracy matters.
And like I said, because of the weaponization of Twitter in football, now it's just like cheating Spurs, got the rub of the green, jammy Spurs or jammy Arsenal.
Look, I think
for whatever side you're on.
In the end, I think what you fall back on is that a draw is probably right. Like say, okay, Kane should have never had a penalty. Aubameyang never should have had a penalty, which means Vertonghen's encroachment never should have been able to occur. So what are we left with? Instead of 1-1, it probably should have been...
I'll tell you what we're left with. We're left with some guy who wrote in, and I respect him, but people think when it's VAR, they're allowed to break the caught offside rule of much less than 100 words.
Oh.
500 words, Andrew.
On VAR?
Yeah.
I would like you to read every one of them.
He would change.
I would like you to read every single one of those
And literally,
words.
These emails we're getting, like an hour after the game, a couple hours after the
game. Well, that makes sense. People are still like emotionally fired up. They need to vent to someone.
Can't you be emotionally fired up about the game? Like the game, you know?
Well, it's hard to separate these controversial moments from
the
game.
I know.
They're like threaded into the outcome.
You're all going to have VAR next year, and you're all going to get what you wish for.
Stop being like
Everything's going to be right.
What happened to us after the World Cup? We were together. We were holding hands, walking down West End Ave. We were high-fiving strangers about the success that VAR had appeared to be. And now you've thrown my hand away. You've pushed me into the bushes, and you're just like running like a madman by yourself.
It's almost like Bette Midler singing "The Way We VAR."
It's not like that.
It's not.
It's never been like that.
All right.
Let's see. The race for top four, though. Like I say, how disappointed Spurs were, and I didn't really feel like it was a victory for them. But then you kind of take a step back, and you do see, okay, well, Arsenal don't gain any ground. Like that could be a vital point for Tottenham at the end of the season. Plus,
it's good. It was good for United.
It was great for Manchester United.
Great result for United, who had created a new concept. Not a new concept. They relied on an old concept from Sir Alex Ferguson to get a late winner.
Fergie time is now to be known as Ollie time.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
You've decreed that.
That's what we're going to call it now.
All right.
I mean, he did it, the 2-0 down against Burnley. Now you got this against Southampton.
Yeah.
And it could have been worse. Why? Lukaku's got to take... So they get the penalty to put it away. Like, first of all, why is Pogba their penalty taker?
Because...
He doesn't know what he's doing. Like, I can't watch him take penalties anymore with the run-up.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it was an excellent save to have your leg dangling out and to catch it like that. I mean, I don't care what anyone says. You can say it's fluke all you want. He's gone down the middle, and the keeper still saved it, diving the wrong way.
Yeah, but Lukaku's in such need of, like, a morale boost personally, and I know he's playing better lately, and two goals. Like, he's getting the confidence boost regardless, but like, a hat-trick, I don't know. There's something about that means something.
I don't understand it. Like, Pogba, it's infuriating watching him take penalties.
I feel like Rashford should take them ahead of even Pogba. I don't know. It's
Pereira got a nice goal, though.
He certainly did. And I thought James Ward-Prowse, in a big moment, the equalizer that he scored to tie it 2-2. I mean, you just can't take a kick better than that.
He's getting better and better. And in the Scott Parker derby, Chelsea won.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's not just the Scott Parker derby. It is a London derby, and Fulham lose again. They extend their record streak of winlessness in London derbies.
Yeah, one of the few games I did not watch this weekend. This weekend.
I know, man. I know. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break because, like you say, this weekend, there's so much more to talk about. We're only halfway there. We still have El Clasico. We still have MLS. We still have a what to watch for that includes both Champions Leagues. We will specify UEFA and CONCACAF.
It's almost too much.
It's too much. Honestly, it's too much. We'll be right back.
This is goal domination!
Return ball from Sergio Roberto. Rakitic in the area. Dinks it over the keeper. Ivan Rakitic makes it 1-0 to Barcelona.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. A little Pantera for you on your Monday. I'll get you going.
Oh, Pantera.
Yeah, yeah. Domination. Barcelona, it continues to just be one-sided. Just, a few days removed from their 3-0 beating at the Bernabeu to advance in the Copa del Rey. Now they come right back at the Bernabeu with a 1-0. Real Madrid really having a hard time unseating their Spanish rival. And it is Barcelona's once again at El Clásico.
Yeah, Barcelona got their goal, dominated the midfield. Sergio Ramos pulled out of position. Rakitic runs in behind with the coolest finish then to lift it over the goalkeeper. Really good goal. Again, Vicencius was to the fore for...
Vinicius, JJ.
Sorry,
Vinicius.
Vinicius was to the fore for Real Madrid.
I'm so in.
Yeah,
I'm
buying
stock.
All right,
I'm in on him.
All right, well, I mean, you'd like him to hit the net at some point.
But he does so much more than that. First of all, he had another one that probably should have scored, but it was blocked right in front of the keeper.
Well, himself and Reguilón would be the bright sparks to come out of the weekend's game. Totally, totally dominated in midfield by Barcelona, overran at times. But this is what I took from the game. Reading Graham Hunter's, I wouldn't say match report, it was more of a week report from...
Graham Hunter wrote it?
Yeah. Graham likes the details.
Yeah.
But he places this Barcelona win in the context of winning against Sevilla, then going to the Bernabeu, and then going to the Bernabeu again and winning. Like, it's been a heck of a week for a team that we were only talking about last week in terms of Barcelona, who were shaky. We felt they're not in great form. And look at the week they've had. This is the paragraph that stood out for me pertaining to the weekend's game. Saturday's result, which ensured that Madrid are no longer a threat in La Liga, and that, in the minds of Barcelona players, meant that they'll be champions by early May at the latest, was something else again. The product of vast, brave, and gutsy dollops of pugnacious defiance.
Oh, man.
But it's true.
That's beautiful.
But it is true. Like, yeah. Real Madrid had a lot of the ball and probed and tried to get something.
Yeah.
Blocks, sinew-stretching tackles, unfeasible headed clearances, support play, covering for displaced teammates, naked conviction, a willingness to keep risking the right passes, constant shuttling about to show for the ball to create angles via which pass-move triangles of possession could be created. It was heroic. And he goes on to say how PK was crucial in that effort. And that's what it was. And Madrid did not have... Bale had a shocker, whistled off, booed before the game, then booed off the field.
It's so toxic.
It's dreadful. Although
It was funny, I tweeted Dermot Corrigan during the game, do you think Bale will be round next season? You know, it was a bit of a facetious question, and he retorted that it's more likely that Bale will be there than Solari at this point. Yeah, Barcelona's just, like Pantera said, utterly dominant.
Yeah, in terms of the score lines, but like you said, Real Madrid, it wasn't necessarily a bad showing from them. I remember Modric with a header that just, like, he put over the bar that was kind of a free opportunity, like, 8 yards away. Vinicius, I don't know, I continue to be impressed by him. He's 18 years old. Can I put you on the spot? Where do you think he ranks right now among, like, world's most expensive players? Like, if suddenly Real Madrid were like, we can't keep him, we have to, he's leaving.
Oh, I don't think,
like,
he's there yet.
At 18, I mean, who's Mbappe, is he probably the most expensive player in the world right now? To me, age is such a factor in this conversation.
Okay.
Like, I'm not saying the best player in the world.
But Mbappe is way ahead.
I would think, like, Mbappe, Mbappe would be one for me. But then,
I mean, it's only going to take some caps for Brazil,
which he is now about to get,
to catapult
them. Called up to them.
And
yeah.
It's probably going to take a few goals as well. But, I mean, you're not wrong in what you're saying. And I'm not doing that whole thing where I think...
I know. It's just, like... I don't know, I'm just so in awe of the fact that an 18-year-old has, like, he comes on for Real Madrid and, like, he's the guy that you can't take your eyes off of on a squad of you know, world-class legends. It just feels like he's controlling things in attack for them, which I don't know if that's good or if that's troubling.
But it's always good to have a young player come in and kind of lift the gloom.
Of course, but where is Benzema? Where are the...
I know.
Like, Bale.
But we should place this in the context of, like, this is a league defeat for Real Madrid against Barcelona. This has been happening for the last decade. You know, the European domination of Real Madrid, I say domination, their excellent trophy-winning exploits of the last 10 years has overshadowed the fact that they have not been dominant in the league.
Yeah.
They can't get their star players up. They compete for a while and then they fade away. They win a title here and there, but they don't dominate domestic play in the same way Barcelona do. So we shouldn't be crazy, but this is now a Real Madrid in transition as well. Add that all into the mix.
Yeah, no question about it. So Barcelona now extends their lead over Real Madrid, who are in third, to 12 points. The gap with Atletico Madrid is 7 points. Atletico won over the weekend. I'll have a little bit more on them later in the podcast. Let's see, JJ, before we move on to MLS. JJ, I want to tell you about Hims.
Please do.
I'm going to do that right now. Do you know 66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35?
By the way, you never commented on my haircut from last week.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a nice haircut. You get the same haircut every time.
Do I?
I have to comment on it each time.
Say a nice haircut, man.
How old are you now?
None of your business.
But you won't tell me how old you are.
I'm in the sweet spot for the old hair losing.
All right, so
I'm hanging in there.
So it's too late for you.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Hims are saying it's over for me.
It's too late for you.
At 36, I'm done.
Yeah, you've crossed the threshold and it's over. So I'm not even speaking to you anymore. I'm speaking to people who are like 30 and under who still want to have a chance at not having to put on the kind of toupee that you're wearing right now.
Do Hims want me to step out of the room for this?
If you feel more comfortable.
Might be embarrassing to read.
You're free to go wherever you want. So I'll ask all of you under the age of 35.
But not me.
Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? How will you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? So I ask you, do you want a bald spot to pop up or do you want to do something about it first? There's a solution, and it's Hims. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. You save hours by going just to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Just answer a few quick questions. A doctor will review it and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. God, it's easy. Order now. Listeners to this podcast get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. $5. That's all. Go to 4hims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. There you go. It's all there for you. You can change everything with a click of the mouse.
A Can I just quickly, this is probably someone who'd love to change everything with a click of a mouse. Joe Prince Wright has just tweeted out an article about the fact that Alexis Sanchez could miss the rest of the season. The Chilean forward injured ligaments in his right knee during their 3-2 win against Southampton on Saturday, and reports from his native Chile say he could be out for up to 8 weeks.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yep.
Just as he gets back into the good graces, kind
of. Kind of. I mean,
started.
Yeah. Something. Doesn't get any better.
And you wonder if that can be like a turning point now, even more so for his career, which was already headed in the wrong direction.
Maybe you wonder what happens in the summer. Do they really want to countenance paying him, continuing to pay him that amount of money?
Well, what do you do? Because
who's going to take it?
Right, so what are you selling him for?
I don't know.
It's an enormous loss.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see, JJ. Here we go. It's back. MLS.
Don't say it like
that. It's back.
Oh, my God. I got chills there.
The good kind.
Nope.
Goosebumps.
No, I'm glad MLS is back. I just don't like you saying that.
So what stood out to you from this weekend? I've got three things here for me.
All right, I'll start. The openness of MLS was on view in the very first game at 1 o'clock along the banks of the Delaware under the Commodore Barry Bridge.
Yeah.
A Toronto team who had suffered a fairly dreadful preseason just rolled into Philly, rang that old crack bell, and left with 3 points thanks to one of the most maligned figures in U.S. soccer. Michael Bradley grabbing a brace to fell the Union along the riverbank. I won't say it was a great game. It was not. I had a little snooze during the second half.
Well, so then who are you to judge?
No, but I
watched. Who knows what happened while you were sleeping?
I watched most of the game. And, I felt like there was a little bit of buzz about Philadelphia having signed Fabian. And
I honestly don't know what they're going to be.
I don't think they're going to be very good.
He did score.
He did score a penalty, yeah. But Toronto looked, you know, that is a good morale booster to kick off the season considering the preseason they had. I would have admonish Philadelphia, though. I know the Sons of Ben, they all turned up in force. That grandstand was very empty, though. It was disappointing.
They're struggling right now.
Yeah, they need to do something to kind of whip up interest. Maybe win a game.
I mean, look, honestly, you laugh, but like that's it.
That's what you got
to
do.
They're so average or below average for so many years that I think like people kind of need to see it before they really decide to buy in. Sons of Ben aside.
Yeah.
Let's see. My first one, JJ, early worry for Atlanta United FC. I saw this on Twitter from Arthur Kogan, who I really enjoy as a follow. He said, what's the point of having a creative attacking player like Andrew Carlton on your bench when you're down 2-0 with 10
preach.
Minutes to go and you sub your left winger out for a 35-year-old defensive midfielder?
Oh.
Serious question.
Preach, Mr. Kogan.
Yeah. Jeff Lorenowitz is the player he's referring to who was subbed on. What? Now, it's so early, but, you know, and I know Atlanta did wind up advancing in the CONCACAF Champions League, but now from their first three matches, they've lost two of them.
Frank getting off to good.
Well, and here's the thing. Like we said on the last podcast, he's not going anywhere.
No, do you think Darren Eales had just a quick little shuffle through his Rolodex to make sure he's got Roy Hodgson on call?
But, like, you do wonder, there's so much talent still on that team. I know they lost Miguel Almiron and Greg Garza. I don't even care. Like, they brought.
But how does Breck Shea start ahead of, we'll say, an Andrew Carlton? I don't get that.
I mean, maybe Carlton is just not proven enough yet, and they think that Breck Shea offers something more that
if you were asking
doesn't.
Me out of that under 17 team that went to, what, the final was it against England or whoever they played, that U.S. team, he was one of the pick of the bunch.
But it's just, I only bring this up because it's just funny to me how early it is in the process, but how much we're already starting to like question things that Frank DeBoer is doing. And part of that is that they were very fortunate with the previous manager, with Tata Martino, and it's hard to measure up to the standard that he set there.
Did you, sorry to cut across.
No.
Did you listen to Taylor Twellman's interview with Frank?
No.
Prior the
no, I didn't.
It was interesting.
Yeah? How so?
Well, Twellman asked him about, you know, what happened at Inter, what happened at Crystal Palace. Oh, it just seemed as if Ronald was like, well, we wanted to change things, and when you change things, it takes time, and I don't know, there was a lot of deflection. He didn't seem to think that he had...
What do you want him to say?
I'm
a buffoon? I don't know what I'm doing here?
No, I don't mean that. I'm just saying there was a lot of, I don't know, maybe it had nothing to do with him. I mean, I don't buy that.
Interesting.
Although I am one of the people who said he deserved time in both those jobs.
Yeah, I mean, three games is...
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. What do you have as another thing that stood out for you?
LAFC provide the late drama to win versus Sporting KC. So often last season, Andrew, it seemed, whether this is really true or not, that LAFC were the victim of late drama or the big comeback. They were never the recipient. And so it was interesting to see them turn the table somewhat with Adama Diomande's stoppage time winner. Look at what they have. They have Diego Rossi, scored a brilliant goal, Diomande, Caius Vea, who could have had a goal himself. And that is an attack that's got to count itself as one of the best, maybe it's up there with the best, if not the best.
You didn't even mention Christian Ramirez.
No, didn't mention. Yeah. I'm just dealing with what I saw in the game last night. And maybe they can be the team that emerges in the West, while Sporting Kansas City, if you were looking at them, you'd say, is Nemeth going to be an out-and-out striker for them? So it was just interesting to see. We all say it's the old adage, well, goals will win games and all that. But, like, they were resolute. They went right to the end. And also, one other note, any thoughts of Zoustog as a replacement defender again for the US men's national team?
I know.
Just look at those two goals. He was leaden-footed.
Well, the last one, the
but
turn that Diomande had on
But Rossi's turn wasn't as, was fairly, he just cut inside him. And Zoustog was...
Yeah, I saw too. As it's happening, like Johnny Russell, you can see in the background on the winning goal, he just falls to his knees and dejects. Like he's just like, how did we just let that happen?
I think Sporting Kansas City are going to be good, but I wonder will they have the goals in them to be really good?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough ask. The first game to go into, that place was a cauldron. What a great atmosphere. Yeah. Games there are fun.
Yeah, Nemeth has three goals, including the CONCACAF Champions League goals and that goal. So I'm not slagging him off, but he's not consistent, so... Yeah. We'll see.
You know who else is back, JJ?
Oh, God.
Jordan Morris is back.
He is.
He missed all of last season with a torn ACL that he suffered before last year in the CONCACAF Champions League. His first match back scores two goals to help propel Seattle to an opening day win. I was very happy for him to see that. Brian Schmetzer actually intimated that Morris could be better physically than he was before the injury due to what he puts down to a very rigorous rehab process.
Well, it is possible to come back better, and if you're predominantly one-sided like him, maybe he works more on balance and things like that, and maybe the rehab process does improve him in terms of balance and in terms of his cadence and all those things.
Yeah, here's the thing that's interesting to me.
Cadence? No. His running gait is what I mean.
Okay, cadence works for me. Call it whatever you want. I found this interesting. Morris's return could obviously be crucial for Seattle. That goes without saying. But just look at the numbers of it. Seattle was second best in the Western Conference last season. So maybe you look at that and say, oh, maybe they don't even really need him that much. But remember this, they achieved that scoring just 52 goals. Only the three worst teams in the conference, Minnesota, Colorado, and San Jose, tallied fewer. So if you can combine what they were able to achieve defensively last year, and then Morris brings back some of the attacking prowess that they clearly did not have but still found a way to win without, they could be dangerous. We didn't even really mention them on the preview last week. They could still be one of the best teams in the West.
We generally gloss over them, though. We have been guilty of that until they make the playoffs, and then you're like, eh, this team could be good.
Yeah. Let's see. What's the last one that you have?
A 16-year-old comes off the bench for LA Galaxy, assists on one goal, and has a hand in the other. Efren Alvarez, Andrew. And now the Jonathan Gonzalez, Declan Rice-style tug-of-war between the US and Mexico begins. Hercules Gomez, if you don't know him with that title. Herc had some interesting things to say about this potential upcoming tug of war.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic praises this kid. To me, that's not the question whether he'll be a good player for the Galaxy. The question is, will he play with Mexico or will he play with the United States?
It's a question we've addressed before, of course, with other players. What are the suggestions, the early doors as to which country he's going to choose, Herc?
Well, my sources with the Mexican Federation are telling me that they're putting a full court press on this kid. They expect to have him available for the Gold Cup when that comes around. Now, if he's available for the Gold Cup and he plays, the U.S. men's national team's out the window. But this kid has Southern California ties. He very much embraces both communities, the Mexican community and the American community. I think it's very much still up in the air.
Oh, boy.
Interestingly enough, that was also my third thing that stood out.
We can't send Thomas Rangan round to his house. Who are we sending? What are we giving? What are we bringing with? What are we doing here?
No, you're right. What is, like, everybody in the NBA looks back on the Pat Riley moment when he sat down LeBron, Bosh, and Wade and got them all because he threw his rings out on the table. You're right. Who can be that guy to, like,
what about,
wow him?
What about we send
our guest on last week's pod, Landon Donovan, right?
Dempsey.
Herc. To take that, you know, the Hispanic, the Mexican angle, right? And we say, you can celebrate your culture and you can celebrate it vociferously and you can still play for the Star Spangled Banner, which will, there's less competition for places. We have to say, can't send Thomas Rongen.
It is funny how, like, someone's going to win the Gold Cup before it's even started. Like, this will be a nice shot across the other rivals' bow if he commits.
The Mexican FA are aggressively going after him now.
Yeah. Mexico is where his parents were born. He grew up in Southern California. This is becoming more and more common between the U.S.
Well, it's going to continue to be. We need to plant the flag.
Yeah, he came up through the U.S. youth system and then switched over to the Mexican youth system. And now you're right, it's up for grabs. For those not necessarily, I guess, all that familiar with him yet, here's an excerpt from MLSsoccer.com about Efra Alvarez. They say the teenager tore up USL last year with LA Galaxy 2, the Galaxy's second
season. So he was 15.
Scoring 12 goals and 3 assists in just 17 matches en route to winning the league's Young Player of the Year award. He ranked number 17 on MLSsoccer.com's 2018 22 under 22 list. And like you said, he was 15 at the time.
Way under 22
list. He's already been tipped as a candidate to become a breakout newcomer in MLS this season and will likely continue to be a hot topic among fans on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. Yeah. Yeah, he certainly will. Because to see that performance as a sub, come on, assist a goal, help set up the second goal to win it. Oh, boy.
By the way, I don't mean to be so blasé about nationality. You know, get in there, plant the flag, do the whole thing. But this is the challenge now as dual nationalities, as this kind of global economy where people live and are born in different countries, then go back to the country of their parents' birth. I'm experiencing it right now with Declan Rice and a couple of other players potentially. It's a real issue. And I'm not sure that just standing by and hoping that his Southern California ties, his friends maybe, the place he went to school, is going to be enough to sway him toward us. Maybe you have to be aggressive. On a similar note, can I just finish with this? I know I'm pushing us over. Speaking of US players in MLS, Paul Kennedy of Soccer America tweeted this on Saturday. Just 79 of the 220 MLS players who started or came on as a sub on Saturday are eligible for the U.S. men's national team. That's 35.9%. Paul Tenorio followed up on Sunday with, my final count is 100 of 242 starters in MLS this weekend were 91 of them American, 9 of them Canadian, and that works out at 41.3%.
It's a little bit of what Landon Donovan talked about with us last week, where the health of the league in MLS is good. You're getting in some real quality players. But if you're somebody who's worried about what it means for the U.S., some validity to those.
I think
concerns.
The average percentage in, say, the Bundesliga of German players lining out is in around 45. So we're 4% below that, which doesn't seem like a lot. But which way are we trending now? I mean, we just talked about Andrew Carrollton, who can't get in the Atlanta
team.
We're
trending in the wrong direction. Wouldn't you agree?
But yeah, I mean, we want the league to be good. We want it to be competitive because no point having your players not playing against good foreign players.
Of course.
But equally, yeesh. Yeah. And it also brings up the question, the eternal question. What is the relationship between MLS and U.S. soccer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These questions are bigger than a mere podcast on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. What to watch for?
All right. Way to talk us down.
Yeah. UEFA Champions League. Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Borussia Dortmund and Tottenham Hotspur. JJ, over their last 7 games, Dortmund in all competitions have allowed 14 goals. I think that is what Tottenham will hope to exploit. Tottenham have not been pouring in the goals themselves lately, still dealing with injuries to guys like Dyer, Dele Alli. Kane, of course, came back ahead of schedule, but is that enough? Going back to Borussia Dortmund, 3-goal advantage, Spurs 3-0. The fact that Dortmund was not able to get an away goal. Here's the thing. Like, if this goes badly, I don't like.
You have to quit the podcast.
This is like a real. This is a low point, the likes of which I don't think I've quite experienced yet for Spurs, should this go the wrong way. Let's all just say a little prayer.
Just believe in yourself.
I believe. Also Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Real Madrid and Ajax 2-1. Real Madrid holding a one-goal lead heading back to the second leg.
How big does this game become now? I mean, they're not...
They can't. They just can't lose this. They're seeking to reach the quarterfinals for the 9th consecutive time. But just 1-3 in their last 4 games in all competitions. That came on the heels of an 8-game unbeaten run for Real Madrid. Ooh, this would be really bad for Solari. If it's not already really bad. They're up 2-1. They're going home. I think they'll get through. Wednesday, 3 o'clock, FC Porto and Roma. 2-1, Roma going back to Portugal with that one-goal advantage.
Yeah, Roma have left Porto in it, and they dominate. Well, I say they dominated. They conceded an away goal, and now it's suddenly a little bit nervy.
Roma have won just 3 of their last 10 road games in all competitions. I don't know. If you're curious, JJ, the 538.com percentage chance, Roma, they have 56-44. I know how much that means to you. And last but not least, Wednesday, 3 o'clock, a lot of eyeballs on this one. PSG and Manchester United in Paris with the Parisian side up 2-0 for the second leg.
Of all the box ticking as a Manchester United man, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has yet to tick the box of a comeback win in Europe. If he does this, there will be people convinced that the spirit of Sir Matt Busby and Alex Ferguson has come together and inhabited the body of the Norwegian manager.
I almost
that he's been controlled. We will have to have a seance.
I don't even know that he needs to come back. If they could still fall short. Let's say they lose this, 1-0 or something. Like they win 1-0 but lose on aggregate.
But
if they play the better football in this game, like if they're still feeling good about the overall performance, because I think their goal right now is not necessarily to win the Champions League. It's to finish top 4. So if they can still take something positive from this that kicks them on, to continue on their run in the Premier League, I think that's even enough.
I know. I was hyping it up a bit.
No, I get what you're doing. Mbappe has scored in each of his last 5 games. He's got 7 goals in his last 5. He's been unbelievable since Neymar has gone out. I don't know, man. I don't have a good feeling about this for United. The 538 percentage, they don't either. 97% they have for PSG to go through. Just a 3% chance for Manchester United. That feels
wrong. But yeah. I suppose they're factoring in all those United injuries as well. And but it doesn't feel fair. 3%.
Yeah, right. Let's see. We move on now to the CONCACAF Champions League. Tuesday, 8 o'clock, the Red Bulls and Santos. Tuesday at 10 o'clock, the Dynamo and Tigres. Wednesday at 8 o'clock, Independiente de la Chorrera versus Sporting Kansas City. And Wednesday at 10 o'clock, Monterrey and Atlanta United FC. I still have high hopes for Atlanta United FC. I really do. I know that the round of 16 was ugly a little bit.
Well, they got through.
They got through, and yeah. I don't know. I still believe. I believe of all the MLS teams there, I still give them the best shot.
I used to have a Monterrey jersey. Do you know that?
What was the jersey you got when you were down there? Last year.
Oh, no, I
the Club America?
I had it already. I had a Cruz Azul jersey.
Okay.
A San Luis. I brought all my Mexican jerseys south. I used to collect Mexican jerseys.
Really?
It just seemed to have Mexican club jerseys. Monterrey was one of them.
Oh, interesting. And one from the She Believes Cup. Tuesday, 8 o'clock, the U.S. Women in action against Brazil. Coming off a pretty entertaining 2-2.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh. How about less than a minute? How about... Now?
Red card.
Well, is that your red card?
That's not my red card.
I'll go first then. JJ, I'm reading now from The Guardian. An Italian national, Simone Mastrelli, age 30, from Rome, has been jailed for 3.5 years after he pleaded guilty to assaulting a Liverpool supporter outside Anfield. Sean Cox, 53, a father of 3, from Dunboyne in County Meath, Ireland, suffered catastrophic head injuries in the attack, which took place before the Champions League semifinal first leg between Liverpool and Roma on April 24th last year. Sean Cox has been recovering at the National Rehabilitation Hospital in, you'll have to help me again here,
Dunleary.
Okay.
Or just say Dunleary.
Dunleary after he spent 4.5 weeks at the Walton Center in Liverpool, a specialist neurological unit for brain injuries following the incident. Mistrelli was extradited to the UK last month after being arrested on a European arrest warrant in his home country. Another Roma fan, Filippo Lombardi, 21 years old, was cleared of inflicting grievous bodily harm on Cox in October, but he was jailed for 3 years for violent disorder. A third man, Daniela Suso, 29 years old from Rome, admitted violent disorder before the match and was jailed for 2.5 years in August of 2018. This is awful, this story. I don't know. I know Sean Cox's wife was at the hearing for Mistrelli. I don't believe that this, you know, obviously, you know, you want the guilty parties to be punished for what they did. I don't know, though, what this does for her. Her husband is still in an awful condition.
No, he has made progress that he literally was in such a state that he has made some progress. But it's, Andrew, he will probably never be the same again. He will, It's more than likely he'll never get back to what he was. It was just such a horrific act and so cheap. What they did to attack him outside, he had no idea what was coming. It was cowardly.
I support a different group of people that kick a ball around than what you support, so I'm going to beat you. I don't get it. I'll never get it.
Give you life-changing injuries.
Yeah.
Means that your family will have to care for you probably for the rest of your days.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yep. What do you got?
My right card is the City Football Group, arising from another dump of information documents from football leagues at the weekend. Over the weekend, Der Spiegel, using documents obtained from football leagues, dropped more information on how Manchester City's owners allegedly used shadow firms to create a player investment fund to flout financial fair play rules and practices, such as third-party ownership of players, which is outlawed in the Premier League, and also the inflation of sponsorship deals. This is from that Der Spiegel report. The European Football Association now wants to take a closer look at Manchester City once again. At the same time, there are additional revelations that shed light on the questionable conduct of the club's directors. If UEFA is serious about following through on the strict course announced by its president, Alexander Efferin, it has no choice but to impose tough sanctions against the Premier League titan.
Feels like it's headed to a bad place, I think, ultimately for City.
I wonder, is it, though? Because of the huge amount of money involved, Andrew, are they actually going to... Like, for example, one of the sanctions that may be taken against them is that they're removed from European competition. Do you honestly see that happening?
I don't know. I mean, could it just be, like, some sort of...
Do you have the faith in UEFA that they will follow through on these
things? I don't know about... Like, there are different degrees to what the punishment could be. Could we be looking at a transfer ban? Like, if it's some kind of fine for the club, that is such a slap on the wrist, it's meaningless. Yeah. It has to be more than that. So, are we talking about a transfer ban, which is a big punishment? Or are we talking about, you're right, no European competition, which is an even larger punishment? I don't know, but it feels like there's too much smoke now for there to be nothing here. I feel like there's going to have to be action. The more we hear about with this.
Yeah, of course, Manchester City, for their part, they released the usual thing. Uh-huh. We know nothing of this. We operate within the rules, etc., etc. If you want to read the full report, mosey on over to @DerWinterback, the Twitter handle of Christoph Winterback of Der Spiegel, which is it's very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I think we're aware of a lot of it, though. That's the thing. It's there in front of us. And, yes, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
JJ, I'm going with Alvaro Morata. Sometimes things just don't work in a certain place and we'll never really be able to fully explain why. Morata's time with Chelsea was largely a failure. Now he's gone to Atletico Madrid where he scored 3 goals in his last 2 matches, including 2 over the weekend in their 2-0 win against Real Sociedad. I don't want to just assume he's going to go back to the player that he was before Chelsea, but can you think of some other examples? I know I'm putting you on the spot, of guys who were really good, went somewhere, were terrible, then left and went right back to being really good again. The main one that I think of, and it's kind of unfair, comes with some caveats, but Fernando Torres is sort of that guy who, you know, great, went to Chelsea, never lived up to those expectations. Now, he did have a season of 22 goals while he was there in 12-13.
In all their across all competitions.
But then he left Chelsea and he didn't quite... Like, he was still good, but I think maybe the expectations on him had gone down from what he was at Chelsea, And so maybe he was considered successful after that, but not necessarily to the level before. I don't know. I'm trying to think of...
The one for me is Diego Forlan, who gets transferred to Manchester United, and it just doesn't really work out apart from a brilliant solo performance, or I suppose a big... He capitalized on a lot of mistakes by a certain Liverpool goalkeeper, Jerzy Dudek, at Anfield one game and scored a hat-trick. But apart from that, it didn't go well for him. And then look at the rest of his career after United. It was just unbelievable. Atletico and Lazio, he just blossomed. And for Uruguay, he had an absolutely stellar goal-scoring career. But the big club that he was at, the big move, didn't work out.
Yeah,
I would say Juan Sebastian Varane at United too.
Okay.
It just never happened for him there or at Chelsea, really. But you couldn't look at his career and say it wasn't good. Riquelme, I think, would be another one. I think when he ended up at Barcelona, that would be an example, I think.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, what do you got?
My man of the match is man and woman of the match. I've entitled this, Volleys Are the Greatest Goals, Part 500. Chapter 1, weekend. Jack Grealish, his comeback game after a long injury absence. He is made captain in a 4-0 win over Frank Lampard's Derby County, and he executes a right-footed volley from the edge of the box right into the top corner. Andrew, directly from a corner kick. Here's the audio.
It's towards Grealish. Oh, what a goal. It's an absolute beauty. And what a way to return to the team.
Now, I couldn't find the commentary from Sky Sports or whoever had the game.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't find the commentator, the impartial guy who would have... Like, how spectacular is that goal?
It's one of my favorite goals that I've seen. If that happened in the Premier League, we probably would be fawning over it, and it would be our goal
right
here.
Do you think that call from the Aston Villa commentator was a call that was befitting?
Oh, what a goal.
Oh, what a goal. Now, I think that commentary was dubbed over it after it happened.
It probably hurts it.
Like, he knew what was happening, but my God.
Yeah, if you know it's coming, he should be writing up some flowery...
Jack the lad! Straight on. Like, it is a brilliant volley.
Yeah.
And then part two from our very own Megan Rapinoe, who scored the opener, on the half volley, chest it down, comes up, smashes it into the top corner in the She Believes Cup showdown against England in Nashville, Tennessee at the weekend. And I think JP Delacamera did a better job.
Five in the attack now. Moore coming for the U.S. in blue. O'Hara. Morgan couldn't get it. Rapinoe. The shot! Rapinoe! 1-0 U.S.
Great goal. The U.S. then fell behind 2-1 in that game. Tobin Heath equalised in the 67th minute. Just a larger conversation. We saw the U.S. women's national team breeze through CONCACAF. Barely had a shot on target against them. And then... they've conceded 4 goals in the last 2 games to Japan and England, respectively.
Yeah, I know. Now, good competition, both of them.
Very good competition, but the defending champions look for the first time in a long time like they have feet of clay, that they can be got at. And the defending on the goal that put England 2-1 up, because I was watching the game on Fox, not good.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to help with whatever fears people might have leading up to the World Cup is, like, this is why they play in this now. You know, because like you said, CONCACAF is a breeze for them.
Yeah.
So in some ways, not to be demeaning, I mean, Canada is a very good opponent for the U.S.
But there's not much else.
But there's not a whole lot else. So it's not necessarily a proper tune-up for a World Cup. So that's what this is. Like, this is where you work out the bugs. This is where you maybe try different things. If you don't want to tip your hand, maybe you hold certain players back. I don't know. But in no way does this really change my expectation for them heading into a World Cup summer.
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned. I think creatively, I'm not sure the midfield is perfect. Megan Rapinoe is just absolutely the most important player in the park for me, Andrew. She's got that little bit. She wrap her in cotton wool before she shouldn't play any more games. Shut her down. Zion Williamson, or is he being shut down?
Well, he got hurt.
Yeah.
But he'll...
Don't allow Zion Williamson to happen to her. I'd be slightly concerned. Yeah. It was defensively...
Well, there you go. That is the show for today, actually. I was going to say this week, but we will be back before the end of the week because we're going to recap the round of 16 second legs for this batch of Champions League.
Nice little Monday podcast for everyone for the commute home.
Yeah, I know. I hope everyone really, really enjoys it. I know I had a lot of fun doing this with you, and we'll do it again later this week. Hey, to you I say...
Oh, what a goal!
Take care, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.